Hey, Labrats, it's Jessica.
And this is Kendra, and you're listening to
Lucid Lab. This is volume 6 of our
lab reports. Today we are going to mix it up a little bit.
We are.
Different than what we have been doing because we, of course, are always trying to get better because we're perfectionists. And we were just talking and listening, I think, to other podcasts and what they do for their listener stories and decided that maybe we should try a little something different. So we're looking for your feedback.
Yeah. It's hard to know this early on what you guys really want, but we want to make sure that we are making everyone happy. And we don't know if every single person likes lab reports. So we're going to mix it up with your stories, but also
some mini episodes, essentially, because we have seen from feedback on other podcasts and just thinking about what we like ourselves. We don't want you to feel like lab reports is a throwaway episode.
Yeah, because it's not for us.
It's not for us. We really enjoy doing this and we feel like it's highlighting our listeners' experiences. And so we want you to look forward to these episodes, but we know not everyone out there enjoys hearing other people's, I guess, stories in a way, and you want content. So what we've decided is we're going to bring you both because that's what we want to do. And so we're going to still bring those listener stories because we love them.
We love them. Don't ever stop sending those. Please keep sending them.
But we also get suggestions sometimes, or we come across stories that we would love to cover on the podcast, but they don't quite fill up an hour and a half. Some of them are only 20 minute blurbs, but they're very interesting stories. We talked about it and we're like, how about we do a hybrid? So we bring some little mini stories that are still content that you're looking for along the true crime, weird history, paranormal. And then we also read listener stories on these lab reports.
So I think it's perfect. And then that way, for those of you who don't listen to the lab report episodes, now you're not having to wait an extra week to have an actual episode. You're going to have some stuff you want to hear in these too.
Yeah. So start tuning in if you haven't already, because you're like, oh, I don't like listener stories. I'm waiting for the real cases to come back. Now there's real cases here. So please start listening. Hope you enjoy it.
Yeah. If there are little stories like this that you know wouldn't be enough for us, suggest those and we'll include them here.
Yeah. Think about your hometown stories or just crazy things that you saw on social media. I know I've come across some of those And we are still planning to do these lab reports every 6 weeks.
Yes.
So with that, I am going to start today with a mini episode.
Yay.
And this was actually brought to our attention by an email we received. I'm not going to say the listener's name because it wasn't really specified if we could. It was more of just like a suggestion. It is a listener in Minnesota. And I just want to say thank you for sending it. And I hope you enjoy that we are now covering it.
Yes,
and
thank you.
This is the horrific tale of Carl Tanzler.
I know nothing.
I knew nothing. And when I read it, I was like, this sounds like right up our alley. Nice. Pretty crazy story. I, when writing the little mini episode, decided to call it When a Crush Becomes an Obsession.
Oh boy. Stalking then?
A little bit.
Okay.
So the story of Carl Tanzler and Elena De Hoyos is one of obsession taken to an unthinkable extreme. This is not just a story about stalking, and it's not a story about murder. Elena was not being stalked while she was alive. It was actually after she died.
I'm confused. Did he just go do salt burn and hump her grave or something?
Pretty close.
Oh my gosh.
If you haven't seen Salt Burn, I highly recommend for anyone.
He didn't just hump. Let's get that clear. He did much more.
Before I go into this, I have to go on a Salt Burn tangent because I was talking to a girlfriend and she had no idea what that movie was, and she was watching it on a plane.
Oh, wow.
Do not suggest. No.
That's not okay.
Not something you really want a grandma sitting next to you to look over
there
at or something.
There is a time and place for that.
Yeah.
And we got to see it in the theater. Just we me did. And her.
And it was really fun.
It was fun.
We had a good time.
I don't know if we talked about this before, but the guy, because it was one of those theaters where you can order food and they bring you food. So it was a dining theater.
Yeah.
And every time he came in, it was always in one
the
of
worst
the
worst parts.
I know. Always the worst. And he would just stop and stare. I'm like, this is awkward.
He's like, hey, here's a new drink. Have some pizza while we're watching this.
You can go ahead and run out.
Please leave. So we'll start with talking about Carl Tanzler and his background. So he was born George Carl Tanzler in Dresden, Germany on February 8th, 1877. So this is an old-timey case.
Okay.
He grew up in Germany, and during his childhood there, he would have vivid dreams of a dead ancestor named Countess Anna Constantia von Hassel.
Oh, wow.
It's a long name.
You weren't done yet.
Woo, I needed a breath in there to say all of that. So in these visions, von Hassel, the Countess, reportedly would show Carl Tanzler the face of his true love.
Oh.
From what we can gather, it was the face of a beautiful, dark-haired woman,
okay,
young girl. This started his obsession. That was the true love that he needed to find.
Even if she was dead.
Perhaps. He then, for whatever reason, moved to Australia and at some point ended up in World War One. Not really sure much more about him. There weren't a lot of records back in those days. But we know after the war, he returned to Germany and he married a woman named Doris Schaefer, and they had two children in the early 1920s. But by 1926, Tanzler decided he wanted to move his family to America, and they settled in Zephyrhills, Florida.
Zephyrhills.
So quite a different place to be,
yeah,
coming from Germany to Florida. And this is when things start taking a kind of odd turn. He moved here in 1926, and 1 year later, he left his family in Zephyrhills, and he took a job in Key West, Florida, which I think is about 2 hours away. I don't know Florida, so sorry, I should have looked this up. Any of our Florida listeners are probably like, Kendra doesn't know anything, but you're right.
But we don't.
And he got a job as a radiology technician at the U.S. Marine Hospital. And he used the name, he changed his name to Count Carl von Hassel.
Oh, such a normal name to have.
The woman that visited him as a child was Countess von Hassel. He was like, I'm going to change my whole personality, and conveniently left his family behind. So there wasn't anyone to, I guess,
say you're crazy.
Say, no, you're not a count, dude. You're just Carl Tanzler.
Was he wearing a cape now?
He was not, but he showed up and he started telling these tall tales, honestly, about having over 9 degrees from various universities in Europe. So apparently he was very convincing. They hired him, although they didn't hire him as a doctor. They only hired him as a radiology technician. And so he began working in the tuberculosis wing of the building. Hmm. This is the 1920s. Right. Tuberculosis was, you know, raging out of control. And this is where he would meet Elena de Hoyos.
Okay.
So Elena would become the object of his obsession. So let's talk about her a little bit before I go into more of the story. Maria Elena Milagro de Hoyos was a Cuban-American daughter of a Key West cigar maker. She was born in 1909, and she was just 17 when she was married off to a man named Luis Mesa. Sadly, their marriage fell apart after Elena suffered a miscarriage.
Oh.
What an asshole. I guess he wanted kids and felt like she couldn't give that to him.
He was trying not to go down the path of King Henry VIII.
Maybe. Sucked for her, or maybe not. I don't know. He may not have been that great of a guy, but he moved off to
not.
If we look at statistics,
right,
or our show, he probably wasn't. So Mesa moved to Miami and left her behind in Key West. And to make matters worse, Elena was soon diagnosed with tuberculosis.
Okay. I was kind of thinking it was leading there.
Yeah, poor thing. So on April 22nd, 1930, she walked into the U.S. Marine Hospital for treatment, and that's where she would run into Carl Tanzler, or Count von Hassel, as he was known now. At this time, he was 53 years old.
Oh my gosh.
And she was 20.
Okay.
Always old dudes creeping on young girls, tale as old as time.
Yep.
So Tanzler, with his self-professed medical knowledge and these 9 degrees he made up, he decided that he was going to cure Elena of tuberculosis and started a variety of treatments. He was using x-rays and other medical equipment. He probably wasn't even supposed to be doing this, but he was determined to cure her because when he saw her, he believed that she was predestined to be that one true love that he had seen in his dream as a child.
Yep.
So her features fit exactly what he thought, and thus began his crazy obsession.
Just forgets he has a wife and children 2 hours away.
Also all too common
for
men, I guess. Anyways, he convinced the family that he had all of these, I guess, new treatments that could fix the tuberculosis, and they even allowed him to come to their home.
Oh.
So she was checked out of the hospital. He was sneaking equipment and everything out of the hospital to treat her.
Okay.
So this lasted for 18 months.
Wow.
While he was treating her as a patient, he also began to profess his undying love. He would shower her with gifts of jewelry and clothing. There was no evidence that she ever reciprocated his feelings, despite his persistence and him showing up at her house many, many times per week to supposedly check on her. Mm. I think it became more of an obsession, but the family was allowing it because they were probably just hoping that he truly could cure their daughter.
Right. Yeah.
She said, you know, I'm still married, which she legally was. Yeah. And that was probably her like way of trying to let him down is like, oh, I'm married. And
yeah.
Otherwise, I might be into you.
Maybe.
Which girls have done. You know, we lie about having boyfriends and things sometimes just to get a guy.
Which you shouldn't have to do.
Sometimes that's the only way a guy will leave you alone. But that had no bearing in Tansler's obsession. He didn't care.
No, they were destined.
And he had a wife and two children back in Zephyrhills.
Yeah.
And that didn't stop him. He was in this delusion that she was the one true love that was like predestined for him. Unfortunately and tragically, Elena did succumb to her illness on October 25th, 1931 at the young age of 22.
Oh,
Tansler was devastated and he offered to pay for her funeral. I'm not really sure, but the family was a Cuban cigar maker. I would think that they weren't poor, but I don't know what the financial situation was there. But he paid for her funeral and then he insisted on purchasing a very pricey mausoleum in the Key West Cemetery.
Oh, no.
To keep her remains above the ground.
So he can go back.
After she was buried in this mausoleum, he would visit her grave every night.
Every night.
He would leave gifts and he even had a telephone installed inside of the mausoleum.
Just in case she wanted to call him?
I'm not real sure what the telephone was for. Or maybe so he could do some work while he was there.
Oh.
I'm not real sure.
Okay.
It's odd.
How does like a phone company be like, yeah, sure.
That makes sense.
Let me put a phone jack right here for you.
From everything I could gather, I mean, this is the 1920s. There's not a lot out there. It sounds like this guy was a pretty convincing person. Okay.
I have 9 degrees. This makes sense.
And I'm a count. Put a telephone in my dead love's mausoleum.
Just in case she wants to call me.
I don't know. Just another bizarre piece of the story.
I'm paying you. Do it.
That's probably, if I was a phone guy, I'd be like, I mean, sure.
Sure.
I'll do it. He continued to visit the mausoleum for 2 years. He would sing to the grave. So he was serenading her, singing her favorite Spanish songs. And he said later, when all of this came out, that he would reportedly hear Elena's spirit speaking to him as he sang those songs. And she would often ask him to take her back home with him.
Oh, no. I'm sure she was like, fuck, I die.
And this guy won't go away.
Never stop hearing his voice. My gosh.
And I don't know how good a German man's Spanish is. So,
oh, yeah, there's that.
He could have been completely butchering her favorite
songs. I mean,
he has
9 degrees, so he should be able to speak Spanish. Other languages.
What if he had a horrible singing voice? She just came back to haunt him, like, get out of here, please.
Yes,
like,
that's what
I'm trying to rest.
That's exactly what is happening.
During this period, we know that he was also fired from his job at the hospital for unknown reasons. Maybe because he stayed up all night and didn't show up for work the next day.
Probably.
Because he was singing songs to his dead love. This is where the story is going to take a really crazy turn. After dark on an evening in April of 1933, Carl Tansler decided it was time to take Elena home with him.
Oh.
And he crept into the mausoleum in Key West Cemetery and he removed her body from the tomb. He dragged her body home in a toy wagon. In the 1920s, like nobody noticed. I don't know what time it was. It's probably 2 o'clock in the morning.
Maybe it was Halloween that day. Oh, wait, you said April.
It was April. I don't know exactly, but he got her back home. I don't know how far he lived, but he dragged her in a toy wagon.
And
basically. Okay. So she had been a corpse for 2 years at this point, and she was decaying as a body does. And when he got her back home, he restored her in a makeshift laboratory that he had built for her. So he had been planning this for the last 2 years.
He's going to Frankenstein her?
He was actually known as the Florida Frankenstein.
Oh.
And this is where it gets really bizarre. He built a laboratory in the shape of an airplane and he called it Elena's airship.
Okay.
And this is where he would put her body. And his plan was eventually to use the plane to bring Elena back to life.
Okay.
This was what he was planning on how he would bring her back to life, is that he would fly her high into the stratosphere so that radiation from outer space could penetrate her tissues and restore life to her.
Okay, so we're just making up everything right now.
He's off
first
the wagon.
Of all, planes can't get to space.
It's now 1930. I don't even know what the planes were like in the 1930s.
They were just those little two-seaters, really.
I don't know if this guy was having dreams. Planes. Like I said, it's a bizarre story. So thank you to the listener who sent this, because it's fucking crazy. But yeah, that was his plan. And this is a direct quote when I just read that, the high into the stratosphere. That came from Carl when he was in court later.
Okay.
So
it's not like he killed her. He's just trying to bring her back.
Yes, that's how he saw it.
Yeah.
So when he did bring her body back and it was in a state of decay, he replaced her skin with silk that he had soaked in wax and plaster because her skin had been decaying. There were pieces of it, but it was a corpse. It was also said that he used piano wire to secure her limbs to her torso just to keep everything together.
Okay.
He made a wig for her from the hair that had fallen out of her skull. So he put it back together and made her some hair. It was also, I also read somewhere that he got hair from a hairbrush at her parents' house. So he was doing some creepy stalker things there too.
At least it's her hair.
True. At least he didn't kill another woman or something to get hair. And then he would douse her daily in disinfectants and perfume to cover up the odor that she's a rotting corpse.
Oh.
He would dress her in different clothing, and he would keep her in his bed at night and sleep next to her.
Wow. He had to smell lovely as well.
Well, he's not working a job now. And from what I read, he lived in a pretty like ramshackle kind of place. So I think he was kind of out on the outskirts. Nobody really knew what he was doing.
So his wife, she's just like, well, I have no idea where he is.
Basically, there's no mention of her.
Okay.
So maybe she was happy because he was crazy. Maybe. And she's like, yeah, go work your job. And I'll just stay here in Zephyrhills with the kids and never see you. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
It was a different time. So Carl continued to preserve and follow this little routine with Elena's body for 7 years.
Oh, wow.
7 years.
That's a long time. Yeah.
Some neighbors, so I guess he's not too far out by himself, or people driving by saw Carl dancing.
Oh, gosh.
In front of an open window.
Oh, wow. Holding her?
Holding what looked like a dead corpse.
Okay.
And they had seen it enough times that they're like, wait a minute, that's not a woman. I think of like Last Dance with Mary Jane, the Tom Petty song where he's dancing. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen the music video.
Yeah.
I'm like, I wonder if he was inspired by this story.
Possibly. I feel like it's been in several movies too.
Yes.
Dancing with a dead corpse.
And when I started looking at this, there's several books and movies that have used the inspiration from this case in the 1930s. Yeah. So maybe he was the OG corpse dancer.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Somehow the word that Carl was dancing with a dead body got back to Elena's sister, Florinda.
Oh no. And she's like, that has to be Elena.
And Florinda was like, you know, what's odd is that Carl used to go to the grave every single day. And he hasn't been to the grave in a while.
Oh, no.
And so then she put two and two together and she went to the mausoleum and had like a grave worker open it.
Yeah.
And the corpse was gone.
Yeah.
So it's now October of 1940. And she was like, it has to be at his house. So she notified the authorities. Ew. I actually read two different accounts of this. I don't know which one is true, but I did read that Florinda went to the house and saw the corpse laying in the bed. And then notified the authorities. And the other one I read was that she just
called.
Put two and two together. I don't know which one's the truth. I'm hoping she did not see her sister's dead body laying in a bed.
Especially with the way he was remaking her.
Yeah. And unfortunately, or maybe fortunately for you guys, I have pictures.
Oh, so interesting.
We'll put those up on Instagram.
Okay.
She was a gorgeous, gorgeous girl in real life, but nobody looks good as a corpse. Especially not plastered of Paris together.
Yeah. No.
And yeah. So Tansler was arrested and charged with wantonly and maliciously destroying a grave and removing a body without authorization.
Okay. I was like, what do you charge someone with? What if this isn't in the law yet?
It kind of wasn't, but okay. They had this because apparently it's happened
grave
before.
Robbery and stuff like that.
Most people are robbing for valuables, right? this guy, I can't imagine being a cop that has to take on this case.
I know. Do we know if he was into necrophilia here?
We're going to talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
So after they were able to remove the body, they did an autopsy and that exposed all of Carl's extensive modifications.
Oh my gosh.
To retain the shape of her frame, he had used coat hangers, piano wire, and he had stuffed her torso with rags. He used plaster of Paris to reconstruct her face, and then he touched it up with mortician's wax. He had replaced her eyes with glass ones, and then he had done the makeshift wig that I mentioned before, and he had stapled that to her head.
Staples, huh? Was he just tired that day? He didn't feel like sewing?
I don't know. He wasn't much of a seamstress.
He sewed a whole wig. That takes a while.
Maybe he was tired. He was like, whatever, staples will work. The most unsettling detail that they found in the body that during this autopsy was that there was a tube placed into her vagina.
Oh, okay.
Sources agree that Tansler never confessed to committing necrophilia, but I saw this in a couple different places. Some said there was no evidence, and then I saw the thing about the tube being in her vagina in a couple places. He kept her in his bed every night. He dressed her up. He was obsessed with her. It's probably not beyond the realm to think that he was.
Was it a squishy tube? I'm confused.
I read somewhere it was plastic, and then I read somewhere else it was paper. So I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't want to think too deeply about it, but no. It's a gross thought. Necrophilia, unfortunately, is more common than you would think it is.
Yeah.
I remember reading that they have to really evaluate people who want to be in the mortuaries and morticians.
Well, yeah.
And what's the other embalmers? Like some of those guys have a thing.
Well, the same should be done with nurses.
For sure. Or even doctors. I've read stories of doctors when women are under anesthesia.
Oh, no.
We're actually going to talk a little bit about the psychiatry behind necrophilia here in a minute. Because I thought, if I'm going to bring this up, this isn't something we talk about often.
No, we don't.
I want to talk about like what people think may have been going on in Carl's head to have done this. So we'll get to that in a second. They did a psychiatric evaluation on Carl, and they actually determined that he was competent to stand trial. This is where he even told them about his crazy idea that he was going to take her up in the airship and do all of that. And they were still like, yeah, he's not completely crazy. Let's let him stand trial. Yeah. But the problem is there was a statute of limitations for the crime that he had been accused of, the taking the corpse. Only had a 2-year statute of limitations. And at this point, he had had the body for 7 years. They could not convict him.
I'm confused. He still had her, though. So doesn't that prolong?
I'm not really sure.
So
I guess
he's
because
only
the actual,
in trouble for the actual taking?
For the grave robbing was the only thing they had on the books. And this is just the legal system that they could.
Okay.
And they had nothing else because it's a dead body. So you can't really say that he's hurting a person. I can only imagine the conversations that went on in the courts. They're like, what do we do with this guy? Like, we need to lock him away. He's fucking crazy. But then there's nothing on the books. They would have had to create a new law. And at this point, he's in his 60s.
Oh, wow.
He's like 62, I believe.
And she's the love of his life. So he's not going to do it again.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that because it's not necessarily that he was obsessed with dead bodies. He was obsessed with her specifically.
Right.
He was never put into jail or anything like that. It was all over the news because this is a crazy fucking story. What was interesting is people didn't actually see him and go, oh my God, this guy is a freak. Like, what the hell? He actually received quite a bit of compassion afterwards. Some women even viewing it as a hopeless romantic gesture.
But this is different. It's not like it was his wife or anything. Exactly. Like, they weren't together.
They thought it was romantic. I'm like, no.
Never love me that much. Please leave my body alone.
Yeah. And then I'm going to question you from wherever the fuck I am. I'm going to look down and be like, I can't believe I was with that guy who's now playing with my corpse.
I'm just going to open up the dimensions, stick my head through and say, stop it.
Knock it off. Stop.
No more.
This is gross. I'm worried about you. And I don't know if this is just part of the times. So while all of this was going on with the trial, they removed Elena's body and they put it on display.
Why?
At the local funeral home.
For everyone to say goodbye again in her new outfit?
I think it was just that whole morbid curiosity. People wanted to see this corpse and they said over 7,000 people came just to gawk.
That seems worse than what he did.
Right. Our society is just fucked up as a whole. I don't know, but yes
of course we know
that
this.
Happened.
Yeah, great. Poor and Elena.
She's just living her life, a very short life. Mm-hmm. That sounded very tragic. And the family was finally able to lay her to rest once and for all. And she was put into an unmarked grave that only the family knows in Key West Cemetery to make sure that Carl didn't
salt burn it.
Dig her back up. Or salt burn her.
Wow.
Now, Carl returned home to Zephyrhills and his wife took him back.
What?
They never lived together again, but it was said that she financially supported him until his death in 1952. I think he was 75 when he passed away.
Bad for him.
I think maybe she knew more than we did that he was probably not all with it, obviously. But his infatuation with Elena wasn't over yet.
Oh.
So even though he lost her body, he actually made another version. Oh. They call it an effigy. He basically reconstructed a corpse that did not have her actual body.
Mm-hmm.
And he put what I kept reading was the death mask. I don't know if that was actually from her corpse. I don't know what a death mask is. I should have looked it up, but life is busy. And he said that he put that on her face and he slept with that. And he was actually found dead in his home, holding this life-size effigy of Elena.
Wow. Till death, huh?
Until death. Wow. And curiously, he was not found for 3 weeks. So he died and nobody checked on him. And then like 3 weeks later, they found him holding her effigy.
I mean, it makes sense that no one checks on him. They're like, well, he's
just that crazy guy.
He's
that
with the doll. So we know what's happening.
I don't know if anybody knew he had rebuilt this effigy until they found him dead with her. I'm sure the family was completely disgusted. I can't imagine, like, if that was my daughter and some 60-year-old dude was obsessed
and
with
her.
And
they just had barely met him. You know, he's supposed to be helping heal her. Wow. Crazy story.
I did want to talk briefly about necrophilia.
I remember growing up and not knowing what necrophilia was, but watching like space movies and feeling like it was something to do with space travel. And I think I was like 13 or something. And then I found out what it was. I was like, wow, I've been using that word for other purposes. I just remember having the moment when I was like, oh, that's what that means.
So for those of you who may have had that Jessica moment yourself, necrophilia is defined as an attraction and or sexual relations with a corpse.
Yeah.
Can also just mean that someone is looking for what they call in psychiatry an unresisting partner. So there can be people who are into necrophilia that don't necessarily go as far as the corpse, but kind of what you mentioned when someone's under anesthesia, or I think back to what Bill Cosby was doing to his victims. And there was another celebrity that was basically making his victims anesthetized so that they couldn't fight back.
Right.
And there's guys into that, which kind of falls into the same category. And they say that if you look at the root of all of this, the reason that you might want an unresisting partner could stem from a childhood fear of being hurt, wanting a non-judgmental partner. It's that whole fear of abandonment. They may feel less anxiety being with someone if they feel like there's no expectations coming from their partner, so they can't disappoint them. I think it's a stretch. Well, I guess it makes sense, and we try to understand where everyone's coming from, so that's the only reason I'm bringing it up here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very broad explanation, because if you are killing someone and then doing it, I don't see it that way. But for someone who drugs someone or takes advantage of them when they're unconscious, that's a different thing. So it's just a broad way to explain it. But
so
I think there are different levels to this necrophilia.
People were trying to, I guess, psychoanalyze Carl Tanzler. They didn't believe he was actually a necrophiliac, although he did have some signs from his personal life when he was younger. He had been abandoned by his family at a young age, so maybe that could have fit in with that. But they really think it was more about the fact that he was just so obsessed with Elena. It wasn't specifically that he wanted to do things to a corpse. It was just that he was
into
her.
That's Yeah, that's how I see it.
And he thought he could bring her back to life. He was delusional. He thought he could be Dr. Frankenstein and it was all going to work out and they're going to live happily ever after because Countess von Hassel.
Yeah. Well, he got the wrong degree. He should have gone to witch school.
Right. This countess told him when he was like 9 years old, he was going to meet the true love of his life and they were going to live happily ever after. And he was just trying to reconstruct that.
Yeah.
That is the first mini episode. Obviously could not fill up a whole.
It was a decent amount though.
Yeah. That was actually longer than I thought. I'm looking at the time over here. So maybe it wasn't a mini episode.
Maybe this is going to be a longer lab reports than we've ever done then.
Sorry. I hope you guys enjoyed that really dark case. Yeah. Or some of you might see it as romantic, like maybe some of those back in the 1930s. I don't, because I don't think she was ever into him.
Yeah. It's complete violation here.
He was a stalker. He stalked her even into death.
That's scary.
That's real scary.
It's really scary.
And the poor girl didn't get to rest in peace.
No. And then they put her on display. So that's fucked
up. That's real fucked up. And we need to question ourselves as a society.
Yeah. I mean, we used to watch people hang.
Yeah. The other thing I read about this story is that there's a Ripley's, believe it or not, somewhere in Florida where you can see the effigy doll that he built.
I feel like I've seen something like that. Yeah. Actually.
And it just kind of looks like a mummy.
Okay. Well,
better than the corpse. Bizarre story.
Yeah. Well, now I'm going to go into a lab report. And just a little housekeeping here. We are also going to be doing something a little bit different when it comes to lab reports, just because it makes sense. You send in your reports, which we love. Thank you. We love the intros. We love when you're talking to us and that you love the show. But we realize it's probably not the coolest that we're just like, oh, I love you, Kendra. Oh, I love you, Jessica. So we're not going to read your intros anymore.
Yeah.
We will read them.
And we will love them.
And we will love them. So please don't stop doing that because, you know, that gives us a lot of
reason to go on.
Exactly. Like, this isn't easy. That encourages us to continue our journey, but we're just not going to read them here.
We like validation, just like all human beings.
Yes.
Please tell us we're doing a good job, but we thought it might come across as kind of obnoxious if we keep talking about how great we are.
Yes. And you don't all do it, so let's make that clear. But
and don't worry, some of you tell us that we're not great. Not listeners, but on YouTube comments.
Yes. I was like, what are you talking about?
Listeners tell us we're great, but people who maybe only listen to like 10 minutes of an episode like to tell us that we suck. Yeah. So
and then I went back, I was like, listen to the whole thing. But yes, we're just going to read the stories from now on. If you want us to include your name, we will still do that, but we are not going to give ourselves a
pat on the back.
Yeah. So here we go. Here's the first one. And ironically, it's about stalking.
What?
I think. Well, based on the title. Okay. I did not choose this.
That's funny.
I mean, we did not choose this together. Yeah. I chose the stories from lab reports and she chose those this time. And we're trying to figure out how that'll work in the future. But today, that's how it worked. And yeah, the title is called Stalked by a Reptilian? Question mark.
Reptilian.
Yeah. So not exactly the same thing, but stalking. Here we go. Apparently, there's a theme today. So she says, I graduated with my bachelor's in computer science 2 years ago. I spent a lot of my studying time in the campus library. It was multiple levels and always felt like stepping back in time. So I loved it there. Straight out of a novel. You could find me there almost every evening. I had two roommates who were more about partying than anything else. So it was really my only place to do actual work. I quite liked the forced quietness of the place because they certainly didn't listen to me and I also didn't want them to feel like they annoyed me. That's a nice roommate.
That's good. Yeah. If you know you don't want to be in the party lifestyle, remove yourself.
Right. It was odd enough at times sharing a space with girls who, for lack of better words, seemed out of my league, but then they'd have random people over and always tried to include me, but it never felt like the people they invited were too happy about that. I'm just socially awkward.
I get that.
They were gorgeous and I am a mouse.
Oh, I bet you're not.
That just means you're really cute. I am still close friends with them today, interestingly, now that we've graduated and moved into real adult life, but I'll always feel like I'll stay in their shadows. Mm. They both got amazing jobs straight out of college, despite their lack of attention while actually in school, and I'm just scraping by. I know the feeling.
Things happen that way sometimes. Yeah. They have connections to get them into good jobs or I don't know.
Maybe they were wealthy.
Yeah, that's what I always think of. Yeah.
The universe is a funny thing. But speaking of the universe, this special place of mine, the library, had its quirks. It was built in the 1870s, so it was old and does not look like any modern library today. From all my reading over the years, I always imagined some quiet, brooding, once in a lifetime attractive man in a trench coat would eye me and think, that's my unique nerdy hot girl, and swoon over me like I was his lifelong wish and desire.
We've all read too many books.
Yes, we have. This is book talk.
Yes, totally.
But that never happened.
Damn
I'm
it.
Sorry.
I'm still waiting for that to happen too.
Yeah, just someone to admire. Someone to
look
you.
At me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but not stalk me.
No.
Which I'm sure is where this is going to go.
I am utterly and possibly forever single. Oh. Although nowadays I'm starting to think that that is a blessing. Yeah.
You can be.
Yeah. Instead, I ran into a man that until this day sends shivers down my spine.
Uh-uh.
The hair on my arms is alert while I type this. Outside of this encounter, the library was my safe space. After this encounter, it took me a month to go back.
Mm-mm.
So one day, it was somewhat chilly and I had a coat with me. That'll come up here soon, so I just wanted to mention it. I got to the library around 5 p.m. and settled into my usual seat. At first, I just read a book for about an hour, a book for personal pleasure, no school, and then I got to it. About an hour later, I was having a hard time understanding something for one of my assignments, so I got up to go find a book that might help. Typically, I didn't actually look for books in the library for studying purposes. I just loved the space. For the most part, when I had the time, I would roam around and find something of interest outside of my discipline. But this time, I actually needed something. So I got up, leaving all of my stuff behind, and went upstairs. What I needed was not there, so I stayed up there for a while looking for something else. As I was turning a corner to go to the next row, I noticed a guy leaning against one of the pillars, but I couldn't see his face. I just remember what he was wearing when I saw him again. He was wearing black slacks, shiny dress shoes, and a long beige tweed coat. He had blonde, slicked back hair. Dress-wise, he really wasn't abnormal, but I took notice nonetheless. I thought he might be a lawyer student or just some other rich kid.
I was just thinking, he sounds like a professor.
I know. But. So I spent more time looking for a book and found something and headed back downstairs to my spot. I spent another 45 minutes looking through it and completed part of my assignment. The rest I knew I could do without help. So once again, I got up and headed upstairs to put the book back. I took that as an opportunity to use the restroom. As I'm walking to the ladies' restroom, I hear a door open and someone behind me at the exact same time. All I saw was the back of him heading into the men's restroom. For one split second, I thought it was an odd thing, odd timing, but really thought nothing of it after that. Once I was done, I got back to my spot and I stayed there for the rest of the time, about another hour and a half. I told you I spent my evenings there. I really did. I was getting hungry though, and it was dark out, so I decided that it was time to leave. I gathered my things and started to head out. As I was about to leave, I heard someone say something fairly close to me, so I turned around and there was no one there. So I kept walking, and when I pushed the door open, I heard more clearly, "Hey, I think this is yours. I saw you get up from that seat, and it must have fallen behind it. It was my coat."
Okay.
I saw his face for the first time. It was the same guy I saw, and he was interesting looking. He was handsome, but not. There was just something about him that felt off. That was my initial gut instinct.
Always trust that gut.
I sort of stared at him for a second, but then thanked him and grabbed my coat. As I was turning to walk out, he said something else that just stuck with me. "Odd night, huh?"
He said that?
Yeah. It didn't register at first. I just said, "Yeah," and nodded. Okay. And then I told him to have a good night. Thanks for my coat again. But as I was walking through the parking lot, I was thinking, odd night for what? You know, like, what's odd? Leaving my coat? But then I started realizing I don't typically leave things behind. I'm pretty careful about it, actually, because a few months before, I forgot my tablet and it was never to be seen again. My stupid brain started wondering if he had been watching me. Then I immediately squashed that thought. Again, not my brooding, handsome bookworm. He was something else.
He was handsome, but not.
I kept thinking about it until my thoughts turned to food and I decided to stop by a little Mexican place on my way home. I lived close enough, so I didn't need a car. It was one of my regular spots. I didn't typically cook at home because around this time the girls were getting ready and would expect me to make food for them too. I typically didn't mind, but I was short on cash and I'm the type of person who will give you my plate. That night I actually needed to eat. I had spent the last few nights up late studying for an exam and tacos were going to be my reward.
Tacos sound good right now.
They really do. Well, we have to eat after this.
I know, so I'm hungry.
We have to think. I ordered my 3 taco plate and grabbed a seat. I pulled out a book, the same book that I was reading earlier, and once again, I was in the quiet. That taco place was amazing, and even though it was popular, for the most part, it was never packed around that time. I'm not much for crowded places. I was there for about 20 minutes. A couple of people had come in and out, but just to pick up orders. But then he walked in.
Uh-oh.
For the first time, I was officially spooked. First the bathroom, then my coat, and now my tacos.
Don't mess with the tacos.
Exactly.
That's my place.
It was too much of a coincidence. And if he was following me, he knew I was walking, which made me uncomfortable. Creepy. I put my head down and pretended that I didn't see him. I heard him order the same meal as me. Ugh. He stood there for a few minutes waiting for his food before turning around. I could hear him walking in my direction. And then, of course, he said, "Hey, coat girl."
Oh, no.
I raised my head and quietly said hello. And then the dumbest thing ever came out of my mouth. And I said, "Guess it is an odd night."
Now it is.
"Odd indeed," he replied, and invited himself to sit down with me.
Oh, God, no. I'm out. I'd be like, well, gotta go.
Yep.
Gotta call an Uber now.
I closed my book and looked at him, thinking to myself, how do I get out of this situation right now? Instead, I asked, "So do you go to the school?"
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I am intentionally leaving out where I went to school because you'll see why. He said yes. I asked him about his major. He said law. I knew it.
Looks like one.
But then he didn't ask me anything. Instead, he just devoured his tacos. It was weird. He was gulping them down. I admit I wasn't around men often, but it felt extreme the way he was eating his tacos.
Like scarfing?
I guess. Just like, like a putting the entire taco in his mouth.
Guys can eat crazy.
They can. It's like, breathe.
It's like,
can you breathe for a second?
Right. It's not going to like crawl off your plate.
Maybe they're worried about that. Maybe they're worried someone's going to come take it.
I guess.
I was still eating the last bit of my second taco, but now I was disgusted and I didn't want any more. While I was finishing the last bite, he started to mumble something. I couldn't hear what he said, though. So I said, "What was that?"
He said, "Can I have your last taco?"
Probably. "Are you going to eat that?"
Yeah, exactly.
He said, "Oh, nothing. Just odd."
Okay.
Again with the odd BS. I was uncomfortable.
Like, who says that word more than once in a day?
Odd. Odd. So, not trying to be rude, but also being pretty clear about the fact that I was about to leave, I started shoving my stuff in my bag. I heard him mumble again, so I looked at him, and I swear to God, his face shifted. It glitched, but not like a computer or TV glitch. He glitched to scales.
Whoa.
I rubbed my eyes quickly and fiercely. His hands were on the table, and they were also covered in scales or something like it. But when I looked back up to his face, it was just him again. I immediately stood up and said, "Well, have a good night." Time
go.
For me to go. I grabbed my stuff so quick. I had the thought of, crap, I better not have left something behind again.
Oh, no.
He didn't.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Like, let that go.
Let that go. That's when you let it go.
Cut your losses.
You left your taco. He'll eat it for you.
Don't worry. He's got that.
He didn't say anything as I walked away. But when I went to push the door open, I turned back and looked at him and his eyes were different. They were not the same eyes. I fast walked home. Running felt too dramatic. I looked back many times to make sure he wasn't following. He wasn't. I got home and the girls were all dolled up and giddy, already on their second shot for the night.
At least she didn't have to go home to a like apartment by herself.
That's
or something.
True. Yeah. I just ran to my room. What did I just see? Was I just tired? No, I saw what I saw. And knowing my uneasy feelings about him before that, it just made sense. I do not think he was human. I don't know if he was a demon. I'm not religious. Was he an alien or one of those reptile beings that people talk about?
Yeah, they say all our politicians are secret reptiles. Have you seen that conspiracy?
I almost went down that rabbit hole last week because one of my episodes coming up, I had to stop myself.
There's so many out there. But what's funny is we all laugh at him and then we were going to find out one day it's actually true.
I know, probably is. But what I knew is he was not like me, and whatever his purpose was with me, it felt intentional.
Ugh.
I was chosen that night or maybe before that. Why, I have no freaking clue, but it felt that way. And let's just say I went to school in a city where most of these types of beings might live.
Okay.
So what'd you just say?
DC?
Probably. That kind of sounds like it then.
I just remember years and years ago. I lived in Austin still. So that's how long ago it was. And there was like a video going around. I think it was George W. Bush and his eyes changed.
I remember, do you remember that? I do.
That's like the last time I thought about reptilians until now that you bring it up again.
She says, think about that airplane girl that went viral for yelling about what she saw.
Oh God, yeah.
I am that girl. Not literally, but I feel like I saw something like she did. Thank goodness I wasn't stuck on an airplane with him, because he was all kinds of wrong. He didn't do anything to me, but what was his purpose in interacting with me?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't stick around to find out, but the thought will never leave me.
It's creepy.
And that's it. I think I saw something I wasn't supposed to, or maybe he was testing me to see how I would react. I don't know. I still lose sleep over it and wonder if I'm being watched. I hate it, but talking about it helps. I'm already the weird girl. I don't want to be any more odd than I already am, but that is my story.
Wow.
Say you believe what I saw. What do you think he was? Definitely not a law student, or maybe he was and just passes off as a normal person day in and day out.
I mean, lawyers are freaks sometimes.
Yeah. And if so, how many of them are there? My mind will not let it go. Thank you for listening to my not scary, but ridiculous story. Other than the airplane girl, I hope I'm not the only one.
You're not.
She signs off with some love and then under a pen name, understandably anonymous, just in case.
I get it. We kind of already talked about it because I brought up what I had seen.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen things over the years about these reptilians that come from, some believe they live in the middle of the earth.
Yeah, that they, like they've always been here. They still are here.
They like crawl out of the depths.
They can just shapeshift.
They're shapeshifters in a way. I don't have a lot of commentary about it. I don't know much about it. I've just heard the stories here and there.
Mm-hmm.
We had a friend in Austin way, way back that was really into the reptilian thing. He's the one that showed us the video of George W. Bush, and he had all kinds of crazy ideas behind it. I don't know that I subscribe to all of them, but yeah, that's the last time I've even really thought about it.
I started this show on Netflix. It's kind of funny. It's called Resident Alien.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a part where he goes to like an alien convention with a friend of his, and he's an actual alien and he wears the human body and whatever, but he was listening to this one guy talk about all the different races of aliens, and every single time he got to a new race, like, he had something to say about that specific race of alien.
He knows them.
Yeah. And then when it got to the reptilians, he said something like, yeah, they think they're going to take over the world, but they're gross. They have the worst hygiene. It's never going to happen, or something.
That's
like
funny.
It was funny.
I remember there being an X-Files about a reptilian now as well.
There's tons out there, and I do want to get into it. So
who knows? Maybe inspiration for a future episode. Well, thank you for writing in.
That was
anonymous.
Anonymous.
Just in case.
Understandably anonymous.
That
just
was fun.
In case.
I mean,
that
not
was
fun for you,
no,
but fun for us to listen to.
Has to be DC, though.
Has to be.
We know where you live.
We know what you politicians are up to. It's the only thing that explains why they make some of the decisions that they do, because it doesn't seem like a human decision.
No. And then you have all those times where they seem to like freeze or like make really weird freaking faces and constantly having like seizures or something.
I mean, that's also because our politicians are all like boomer,
80,
need to fucking 9. Retire age. Yeah.
Sorry. This is bad.
Nobody would be working any other job over that age. And yet that's who we elect. Come on, people. We can do better.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, I'm going to take on the next one. And this is another mini episode, but this is actually something that I had written down on the calendar to do a full episode on. And then when I started researching, realized it's not going to take up much. And this is my own. So this doesn't come from a listener. This is just Kendra's interest. And I thought it was really cool because the timing is perfect because we are now into March. This is coming up and it's Colorado. So this is kind of just some weird, bizarre
history.
Oh, this
is Colorado? Okay.
Yes. And it's the Frozen Dead Guy Days.
Days.
I think at some point it was also called Frozen Dead Guy Festival. It's changed
it's
a few things.
That happens here.
So this is an event that happens. I want to talk about it. I think it fits in with our show.
Okay.
In a couple of weeks, when most of us are going to be celebrating St. Patrick's Day on March 17th in Estes Park, which is where the Stanley Hotel is located. So this is also full circle here.
Yeah.
And I found something out I did not know by researching this. There will be the Frozen Dead Guy Days. And this is to celebrate an actual frozen dead guy that lives in Estes Park now.
That lives in Estes.
Well, I guess he doesn't live. Well, he's dead.
Okay.
But his frozen corpse is still there. I guess I have a theme today of corpses. I don't know. So this tradition that started in 2002, it's been going on now for over 20 years, and it's become this national phenomenon. People travel to Colorado specifically to be part of the Frozen Dead Guy Days.
Trying to imagine what is included here.
So let me just tell you, Jessica, what happened. So it's celebrated on the second weekend of March. They have coffin races. So people put a friend in a coffin and race it. They have teams. They have the cold water plunge.
Oh, not so fun. I know. I probably should do it. I know there's a lot of health benefits.
There is a hearse parade. So you can decorate your own hearse. There is a frozen dead guy lookalike contest.
Oh.
So people dress up.
That's kind of fun.
And they show a documentary, and we'll talk about the whole reason that Frozen Dead Guy even exists is what we're going to get into because it's weird history.
And it's pretty cold up there still around March. So are they all going to be frozen?
So, yeah, they show a documentary about the frozen dead guy. He's known as Grandpa Burrito. And we'll talk more about him here in a minute. Also, this year, I was looking at like the schedule just because I was interested. And they have something called the Royal Blue Ball.
Oh.
They have the zombie bar crawl. They have a weekend at Bernie's beach party.
Nice.
And some other events that were titled things like Brain Freeze and Icebreaker. So there's this whole theme to it.
Wow. That sounds fun.
How did this festival come into existence?
Well, people freeze there all the time. We've talked about it in Stanley. That little girl or that teenager, she died.
So it actually didn't start in Estes Park. It just moved to Estes Park in 2023.
Because it's a cool place to be.
No, there's much more.
I have no answers, crazy apparently.
Idea behind this. I live in Boulder. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I can say this. There's a town west of Boulder and it's called Nederland.
Yeah.
And people say, if Boulder's not weird enough for you, move to Nederland.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard that. I've heard
I
that.
Haven't. Mm-mm.
Nederland is like this tiny little mountain town. It's kind of a hippie vibe. Like people move up there to live like off the grid.
Okay.
No electricity. They have a little grocery store. I go through there quite often if we go skiing at Eldora. I haven't been skiing in 2 years, so I guess I don't go through there quite often. But there's a lot of hiking trails up there. So I've been up there when I go hiking in the summers. So Nederland is actually where this festival originally started.
Okay.
So let's go back to, why is there a frozen dead guy?
I don't know. I mean, it is Colorado.
His name's Grandpa Burrito.
Okay.
He is an existing corpse to this day. He's been there for over 20 years.
Frozen.
Yes.
Okay.
So this goes all the way back to Norway.
Oh.
Interestingly enough.
Okay.
And there was a man named Burrito Morstal.
Wait, what was the first name?
Burrito.
Oh, Burrito.
Mm-hmm.
Burrito?
Burrito. It's a Norwegian name, B-R-E-D-O.
Okay.
Burrito Morstal.
Gotcha.
He apparently was out skiing one day, as everyone in Norway must do, and he suffered a heart attack.
Oh, no.
And he passed away unexpectedly. And his grandson, Trygve Baug, was at the time, we're in the 1980s.
Okay.
And Trygve is really interested in cryonics. Have you heard of cryonics?
Yes. Yeah.
I thought when I did this episode, I would talk about cryonics and all that, and then just realized it wasn't that interesting and I didn't want to do it like a whole episode on it. But story is very interesting.
Yeah.
So cryonics, most of us would be familiar with Walt Disney was frozen cryogenically because at some point, if you freeze the body, you can be brought back to life,
mm-hmm.
is the thought behind it.
Right.
And there was a big influx of this, I think in the 70s, and they opened all these facilities around the mm-hmm. world to cryogenically freeze people.
Mm-hmm.
You can get your whole body frozen or you can get just your head frozen.
Yeah. I've listened to a lot of stuff about
it's really this, crazy pseudoscience. There's really not a lot behind if it could actually happen, but mm-hmm. they put you in liquid nitrogen. They keep you in a lab, I guess. You're just like floating. So this grandson of Burrito, Trygve, was very into that. And when his grandfather passed away, he loved his grandfather and he thought I should get him into cryonics.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, along with his mother, came to the United States in 1989 and they brought this corpse with them to be put into a cryonics facility that had been started in San Leandro, California, and he would be stored in liquid nitrogen. They put his body on dry ice for the trip and they arrived and they checked his body into this place called Trans Time Cryonics Facility, and he was there from 1990 until 1993.
Okay. Traveling overseas.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you have to be a certain amount of dead for this to work or not work.
Yeah, you can't start decomposing in any way, I would imagine.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about it, but they brought him to this facility. They were accepted. But for some reason, maybe they ran out of money or they thought they could do it better. Trygve had this idea of opening his own cryonics facility and he convinced his mother, Aud. Interesting that I'm bringing that.
Whoa.
Spelled A-U-D.
Okay.
Just all kinds of full circle moments here today.
We did not talk about any of this today.
We don't talk about these episodes with each other ahead of time. We have no idea what the other is bringing in. So,
wow.
The universe.
It's odd.
So they decided they were going to create a cryonics facility of their own, and they moved the body on dry ice to this little town in Nederland.
Oh.
And they built a tough shed, if you know what those are. They're
wow.
like these big rubber, mm-hmm. kind of Rubbermaid looking sheds.
Yeah.
That was where they were going to start this facility, and his grandfather, Burrito, would be the first one. They were keeping him in this tough shed shack, with dry ice, and they were just replacing it every day.
That's a lot.
He was kept in some kind of like box. It's a really bizarre thing.
Okay.
Well, here's the problem is that they were not U.S. citizens. They were from Norway. And at one point, Trygve, his visa came up. He hadn't been doing the right paperwork and he actually got deported from the United States. So that left his mom, Odd, to take care of their cryogenics facility that only had one man in it.
And that required dry ice 24/7.
Yes. And so she continued this and kept him on dry ice for years and years.
Wow.
This is where it gets even more bizarre is that they were living in a house. Odd and Trygve were living in a house that had no electricity, no plumbing, none of that.
Mm-hmm.
But they had this shed where they were keeping dry ice and a dead body. And at some point, the authorities came out there because they were in violation of local ordinances for how they were living in this home with no electricity, no plumbing. They didn't have the licenses.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, when the authorities showed up, she told them that her dead father's body was out in the shed and that they couldn't take her out of her house because then something would happen to his body and she had to keep that dry ice going.
Okay.
This got out there and the reporters went wild with it because it's fucking crazy. So at this point, it's 1995. She was brought to court for zoning violations and she was found guilty. And the Netherlands town judge ordered her to remove the frozen body of her father from Netherlands within a month or she would face 10 days in jail and a $600 fine. But because the reporters were there, this story became a sensation.
Yeah.
People were saying, you know what? This is kind of a sweet story. I don't know.
I mean, at least it's her dad.
Right.
And not some random man that she decided to love.
So I have two stories today about people just keeping corpses in their house.
Yeah.
I guess it's more common than you think. And everybody was like, just let her keep it. Like, it's no big deal. They allowed her. They did write a new provision to their municipal code in Netherlands that said it was illegal to keep bodies in your home, the whole or any part of the person.
Oh.
Which is not alive. Their section 734 of the Netherlands Municipal Code says now.
Oh, okay.
But because of all this publicity and the reporters, they made an exception for Brito. They actually called it the grandfather clause, which kind of fits because he's Grandpa Brito.
It does.
And Trygve, he's over in Norway, but he wanted to keep this cryonic dream going and he was able to secure the services of Delta Tech, which was a local environmental company to keep the cryonic facility that has the one man in there running. The person that they brought from Delta Tech was known locally as the Iceman, and he became the caretaker responsible for transporting the dry ice necessary to keep Grandpa Burrito in that state. It became a sensation, and a Denver radio station actually raised money to build a new shed to keep Grandpa Burrito.
And nice. He needed an update.
And Odd couldn't take care of him all on her own anymore, and it just became a big funny thing, I guess, or bizarre. Are quirky. I don't know. Caretakers have changed a couple of times.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, this became known that there was a frozen dead guy in Netherlands. And then the municipal, what are they called? Like the city council or whatever is like, well, we should capitalize on this if Netherlands being known as this quirky place. And in 2002, they started Frozen Dead Guy Days. They would actually give tours of the shed so people could go in and see where Grandpa Burrito's body was being kept with dry ice.
They needed to make it a see-through casket. I mean, they did it to Elena.
I
don't know if
it is or not. Like, I live literally 40 minutes away from this place and I've never been to Frozen Dead Guy. Maybe one day I will. But they said the festival was created to pay tribute to Grandpa Burrito. So it wasn't done just as a...
Watch, they do somehow perfect this and bring him back to life in the future. And the first thing he says is, I hate people. Take me somewhere else.
He's like, I don't want to be part of this.
And everybody over however long helped to keep him on dry ice.
So during this, there is a documentary out there. I have not watched it, but it's called Grandpa's in the Tough Shed. You can watch it. And they show it during the Dead Guy Days. And there's a newer version of the film called Grandpa's Still in the Tough Shed.
Oh, wow.
And it premiered in 2003 during one of the events.
That's funny. Great title.
So this festival has grown and grown in attendance and Netherlands is a small area, but this brings a lot of money to the town. It's kind of just like this cool, quirky thing. People will go ski at Eldora and then go to Frozen Dead Guys and do the zombie crawl. They'll do the coffin races, all of that. There's some great pictures out there. I'll post them on Instagram.
Sounds fun.
It kind of is something maybe we should check out sometime.
We should.
it was in Nederland until 2020 when COVID happened. Oh. The festival didn't run because okay. people can't be together. And then they were going to bring it back.
End up in the coffin. Just kidding. Probably. Yeah.
In 2019, right before COVID, they estimated that there was about 25,000 visitors to this festival.
That's big.
And if you've ever been to Nederland, like, I don't know how 25,000 people fit there. Like, I think it's maybe a town of like 1,000.
I don't see how that fits in Estes either.
Well, in Estes, I think they have a little bit more room. They do a lot of festivals in Estes. They do the Scottish Highlands Festival. Oh. And Estes Park is a tourist town, so it makes more sense.
Yeah.
What happened is Tryggvi, he's still alive, and he felt like they were taking advantage of the story and they were making all this money. And he actually filed a complaint against the Netherlands.
Yeah, I get it. It's his grandpa. Like, yeah. Back off.
And they kind of stepped away from it. 2022 was the last time it was held in Netherlands. And in 2023, Tryggvi actually made a deal with the Stanley Hotel.
Oh, wow.
And transported the body from the Tough Shed in Nederland. And it's now at the Stanley Hotel.
It's in the Stanley?
Yeah.
Whoa.
And I didn't know this when I researched the Stanley.
Yeah, no. Does he have a room to himself?
He has a whole museum.
Oh, he has a museum.
Last year in 2023 was the first time that the festival moved to Estes Park, and they now have a cryonics museum where Grandpa Brito is kept. Whoa. And you can go and see.
Okay.
They have a much larger space and they've added more to this. There's like some really cool bands. They have 3 days worth of music with a lot of like local Colorado bands are coming to headline, and it's going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
So if anyone's going to be here, it's March 15th through the 17th, and you can go see the coffin races. You can go do the polar plunge if you want, all the live music. They'll have the dancing, the blue ball that you can go to. And then you can visit the old ice house at the Stanley is actually where they put his body in the museum.
Old ice house.
The old ice house.
Wow.
And I remember seeing that on the tour for the Stanley years ago, the old ice house, but you didn't go in there. It was probably just a storage shed. And now they've done this. And I also want to bring up, because I think this is cool, because the Stanley is near and dear to our hearts, that they have something else coming at the Stanley soon. So not only can you go see Grandpa Brito, but we know the Stanley Hotel is known as one of the most haunted hotels in the nation. It has now signed a deal to put together a new horror movie exhibit there.
Oh.
And it's run by Blumhouse. I don't know if you're familiar with them. Yeah.
Okay.
So they do horror films like Halloween. They just had Five Nights at Freddy's that came out. Megan, The Purge. And they're going to be building a 10,000 square foot space at the hotel to have exhibits from the company's movies.
So kind of like a Ripley or like a... Yes. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, there's even more reason to go visit the Stanley now. It's becoming quite an attraction.
And they're going to be building a top floor.
Oh,
they're adding like 50 more rooms.
They probably need to with all of this going on.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be the second annual Frozen Dead Guys in Estes Park. They did interview the family and they are still hoping that one day they'll get to see Grandpa Brito again and that he will be able to be either cloned or revived from his frozen corpse.
You would almost hope to be cloned.
Yeah.
After time.
Well, okay. Here's the thing is he passed away in his 60s or 70s, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. Do you want to come back in your 60 or 70 year old body?
No,
like,
probably not.
Even I think about that with Walt Disney. It's like, no, I want to be cloned and come back, you know, with a very healthy, vibrant 20-year-old body, not a 70-year-old body. So anyways, that's my other story that I just had to share.
You have had this on your list for a really long time.
I have.
And it definitely was not a whole episode's worth, but
no,
it's
definitely
very interesting.
Not.
And it's
crazy.
Here.
Somebody had a frozen dead body just hanging out in their shed for years before anybody even knew it.
But did grandpa want this? I feel like one of the biggest things when it comes to cryogenics and why it's such a hot topic is because most of the time the consent is not there from the person that it's happening to.
And that's what I read is that this was just Tryggvi's idea. Like he and his grandpa had never had discussions. Like Brito was never like, yeah, I want to be frozen. It was just tricky. Yeah. He's like, oh, this is the first person I know close to me that has died and I'm going to put him in this facility. And his body is still
rough and tough in that tough shed.
Honestly, it's probably being taken care of even better today if it's at the Stanley.
Yes, at least there is that. It would have been very unfortunate and sad that they missed a dry ice day or something and it just was all for naught. But now it's all these years later and he's at least taken care of.
And he's actually... At the Stanley, he is now submerged in liquid nitrogen.
Okay.
Which is the way you are supposed to keep a body in cryonics.
Yeah.
So That's my story. Well,
very, very interesting.
And if you want to go to Frozen Dead Guy sometimes, Jessica,
I mean,
we should check it out.
We should.
At least it'd be some good content for seriously. Social media.
It would be cool to see these coffin runs or whatever.
I know. Or the zombie bar crawl sounds fun. Or the blue ball. You get dressed up like zombies and go dancing. Like that's that sounds cool. Kind of fun.
That sounds fun.
And it's the Stanley.
Stanley.
Rooms are probably $800.
Yeah. But no, we can't stay there. They have some great motels in Estes if you ever want to visit. All right. So this next one is a lab report and it is called Dallas John Doe.
True crime.
Maybe. Okay. So this is Charlie from Dallas, Texas. I have a wild story for you girls. Even today, the degrees of connection with this boggles my mind.
Okay.
It is not true crime, aliens, ghosts, or any of the sort, really, but just a really interesting story.
We love interesting stories.
Here we go. I live in Houston now, but 6 years ago, I was in Dallas. I was a registered nurse for a major hospital in the ICU. I've thought about how to tell this story. To understand the impact this has had in my life, I've decided the best way to tell you is to relay the in-between pieces first.
Okay.
At the time this, we'll call it an event, happened, I was living with my brother in our grandparents' home. It was left to us. My parents are well enough off, and it was a nice thing that my grandpa did for us before he sadly passed away the year before. Technically, my older brother was given the home, but it was all of ours. But if we ever decide to sell the house, we're going to split it evenly unless we all come to hate each other and fight over it.
Unfortunately, that can happen.
I know. I've seen it happen. Yeah, I know people have done this. And he says, just kidding. We love each other. For now. I eventually got kicked out, but back then my brother was in sales and mostly on trips and I worked odd hours, so it really worked for us for quite a while. I pretty much only slept there and he was never home, which helped me out because I slept during the day mostly. One of the rare days that I was awake during the day, I went for a walk around the block and ran into one of our neighbors. She was out walking her dog and we have always been friendly, so we walked together for a while. She started talking about her friend's brother who was missing. He was a known drug addict but had been sober for over 3 years and had since built his life back up, but one day he didn't come home. He also had a baby on the way. He fell in love with a woman in AA or some kind of accountability group, and one thing led to another. I was listening to this story and I just remember feeling bad for the guy that people would automatically assume that he just went back to using, because that's what happened. She said they thought he would pop back up in a few days or in a couple weeks asking for forgiveness. I mean, I understand, especially if it was ongoing for years.
Yeah, you become desensitized, unfortunately. Yeah.
He did have a baby on the way, and a baby is a massive commitment. Maybe he got cold feet and the stress caught up to him. We see people in the ICU all the time with drug addiction. But I left that conversation just hoping he was okay and that things would work out, especially for the baby's sake, considering from what I understood, he was doing all the right things before he disappeared. About a week after this, I was in line at Starbucks, just kind of zoned out. I was always tired and always wired. That's me. Story of my life. I don't make a habit of eavesdropping, but could hear the conversation going on behind me. It was two teenage girls talking about someone who works somewhere they go. At the time, I didn't know what it was about, but I gathered that it was some kind of recreation center, like a YMCA, and it sounded like they were talking about a counselor that worked there. Talking about how they hadn't seen him in more than a week and wondered why. Maybe he was on vacation. Maybe he quit. Maybe he was fired. But they were talking about how he was their favorite there and it wasn't the same now and wanted him to come back. One girl said, yeah, he's the only one who really understands us. And the other one responded saying, yeah, let's skip today. What's the point?
Aw.
That's sad. Kids need stuff like that.
Yes, they do. Because then they get into trouble.
Yeah. I would have moved forward in life never thinking about overhearing that conversation ever again, but it comes back once all the puzzle pieces start to fit together. Later that same day, or the next, I can't remember, I was browsing Facebook and a friend of mine shared a GoFundMe link for a girl who needed some help getting on her feet. She was pregnant and alone. Just needed a little something to help her prepare for the baby coming. For a split second, I thought back to my neighbor and her friend's brother, but then let that go after I clicked on the link and read the backstory. It didn't mention anything about a missing boyfriend or husband.
Mm-hmm.
But I was feeling charitable and I donated $25. In the story, I read that they were also accepting donations of baby stuff, so I forwarded the link to my sister because I thought she might have some stuff she was willing to part with. I found out a few days later that she did reach out and gave the expecting mother quite a bit. She found out that she was having a girl, so it worked out well.
Good.
Nice job. Several days after that, I was on Craigslist
podcast.
I often sold random stuff on there. I was a bit of a collector of things, but I wasn't a hoarder. So I would turn around and sell other things just to keep my little corner of the world small. I have always had motorcycles, so a lot of stuff was related to that. It is generational, starting with my grandpa. My brother doesn't anymore. His wife won't let him, but I rode mine to work every day. I needed a new helmet, but I wasn't in a rush, so I wasn't actively looking for one, but came across a really nice one that was practically brand new and a brand that I liked on Craigslist that day. I picked it up in the morning after a shift the next day. Just another piece of this puzzle.
Okay.
Okay, so back to the beginning. How does all this tie together? As I mentioned, I worked in the ICU. I worked the night shift mostly. One night, a man was brought to us after his time in the ER. He was pretty beat up. He had been hit by a car. He was hit at 25 miles an hour trying to cross the road.
Ouch.
It was around a bend, and technically he was jaywalking. So the man that hit him, I found out, was not charged with anything.
Yeah, that's tricky.
Yeah. He had a broken arm, broken leg, broken ankle, broken clavicle, a skull fracture, and other contusions. When he came to us, he was still under. When he was picked up by the ambulance and after searching through his belongings, they didn't find any identification on him. There were two cops waiting to speak with him. When he woke up, I was in there checking his vitals and asking some initial questions, and quickly realized that he was either lying, didn't want me to know who he was, or was telling the truth. He didn't have any memory of his life.
Okay.
He didn't know his name, his age, where he was from, anyone he knew, etc.
This sounds like Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy.
An episode on Grey's Anatomy.
I'm trying to think because I've seen every episode of Grey's Anatomy.
I'm thinking
of
the one where George is
Oh, don't make me cry.
One of the most sad episodes
ever. I know,
that's
like the worst episode.
And I didn't see it coming at all.
Neither did I.
No one did.
That killed me. We love George.
We love you, George. Come back. Come back, George.
I mentioned it to the cops and they did their own round of questioning. It was my first real connection with a John Doe.
Mm-hmm.
I felt really bad for him. He seemed like a nice guy. He wasn't freaking out as I would be if I woke up with no memory of anything. He was pretty calm, but every now and then he would wake up in a panic, a literal panic that we would have to calm him down from. It was only in those times that he seemed like he was scared for his life.
Okay.
He was young enough, in his 30s. He was on his way to making a full recovery physically, but he still couldn't remember anything. He found out quickly what food he didn't like, but that didn't help. We tried playing music for him, putting on TV shows, movies, etc. It became a bit of a game for all the nurses to pop in randomly with a random item to see if he recognized it and if it would trigger anything for him. Nothing worked until one day when I had just walked in. I was carrying my new helmet. He was walking outside of the room with another nurse. He saw the helmet and just stared at it. He looked up at me and just pointed at it and said, "That, I know that.
Okay.
I think I ride bikes.
Hmm.
I think I have something just like that, or I used to."
Okay.
And as exciting as that realization was, his memory stopped there. He couldn't grab anything else from that, but he knew the feeling it was giving him. I could tell he was really disappointed the next day when nothing else came to the forefront. He was almost ready to be discharged. He was doing well. He had some more healing to do, of course, and some PT, but we needed the bed and couldn't keep him there any longer. Other staff were helping to set him up with resources and outside therapy until hopefully someday he would remember something. Another nurse bought a blank book as thick as a chapter book, and we all took turns over the next couple days filling it with notes, pictures, memories of time over the last few decades, just anything to help him jog his memory, a little going away present full of random crap. That's kind of cool. I wish I could.
Nurses are amazing, the things they do for patients. Yeah. They really are.
The day came and he was leaving. Thankfully, I got to be there that day. I was working a longer shift because we were short-staffed, so I got to say goodbye. Some of us gave him our personal phone numbers and other ways to contact us, including me. So I didn't think that it would be the last time I would see him, but it was a weird thing watching a guy walk out into the world without any knowledge of his life.
Like, where did they take him?
I don't know. Maybe it says here. I'm assuming just to like...
assisted living or something. Like, where something do you take like someone that who doesn't know? They don't know how they can work. They don't know what their skills are.
Kind of makes me think maybe like a halfway house type of situation.
Has to be.
Yeah. The whole time he was there, I didn't sleep well. I couldn't stop thinking about it. And the cops couldn't identify him. He wasn't in any system. He had never been arrested, never in jail. There weren't any missing person reports matching his description. He was just John Doe. It was just crazy. It's hard to imagine with the way the world is now that anyone anywhere could walk about life without someone being able to find out who they are.
Right.
That is crazy.
People would have reported him missing or something.
Something.
Like to find. Yeah. It's a big city.
Yeah, that is a big city. So he left and we all went about our shift until one of the women from intake came to our unit and all I heard was excitement. Everyone was talking really loudly. I was in a room with another patient when I heard the commotion. I went out to scold everyone, but then saw that everyone's faces were lit up. A friend ran up to me and told me that John Doe was no longer John Doe.
Oh, okay.
My brain exploded instantly.
Like, who is he? Yeah.
Like, what the hell do you mean? He just left.
Okay.
Apparently, when heading out of the hospital and walking past registration, someone recognized him.
Oh.
His girlfriend. She was there to have an ultrasound. She had some kind of pregnancy scare and scheduled a late ultrasound to make sure everything was okay. The reunion was quite the spectacle, they said. I wish I could have seen it, but you can only imagine.
Yeah.
I won't say his name here. Legally, I can't, but he was my neighbor's friend's brother.
Okay.
He was the boyfriend of the girl asking for donations.
Oh, my God.
She didn't mention him missing because she didn't want to shame him publicly for leaving. She believed that he would be back. She knew he was under a lot of stress. She was planning to forgive him. But she did think that he was using again, which is a sad part of all of this.
Right. So they just wrote him off.
Yeah. But maybe a lesson for everyone out there. Don't assume anything. Check on your loved ones always.
Yeah.
He was the counselor for an after-school program for troubled teens. And I bought his motorcycle helmet.
That's crazy.
Just another thing she was trying to sell to help prepare for their little girl coming. Her brother was the one who met me for the exchange and why I didn't connect it at first. John Doe used to ride motorcycles. He didn't have one anymore, but still had a helmet, a memento, something he kept to motivate himself to get back to a point where it could be a passion for him again.
Okay.
I gave it back to him, by the way.
Oh.
It's very nice.
Wow, it's like a full circle.
I know. This is crazy. He came back to see us all about a month later after his daughter was born in that same hospital. He still didn't have full memory of everything. Just bits and pieces were coming back little by little. He came to thank everyone for trying so hard to help him. He seemed really good and ready to be a father despite everything. Scared as hell, I'm sure, but it seemed like everyone actually stepped up to help him. At first, they wrote him off as a drug addict doing drug addict things.
Yeah.
And that he would come back home begging for forgiveness or steal something to sell. Nope. Just a guy who got hit by a car.
Just an unlucky day.
And his stuff was in a locker. He found that out just a few days before we saw him. They finally opened up a locked locker at a gym and found his stuff and got in touch with him.
Oh, wow.
No one knows why he was outside of the gym trying to cross to the other side of the street that day. Maybe he'll never know, or maybe that memory has since come back. I lost touch with everyone there. I got little updates here and there for the first year after all this happened. You know, if someone heard something, but I haven't heard anything in a long time. And really, that's fine. I've moved on. He moved on. Everyone moved on. But he had a fresh start in a lot of ways.
That's good.
So just a crazy story that I was part of. I was never really close with him specifically, but our connection was strengthened when I realized I had his helmet and that my sister and I donated to his family. It's just something that will always stay with me. Hope you guys both enjoyed this story. It is one for the books. Maybe a movie someday. Maybe he'll write a book someday. But I would definitely say that there are some lessons to be learned from this. I don't know why the universe chose me to send all these signs to, but I missed them. So I was not the right choice. That's true.
He didn't connect it. Yeah.
In the last ditch effort, they had to send her there to catch him walking out the door before he was gone forever.
Yeah.
Bonkers.
What would have happened if she hadn't been there?
That's
like,
crazy. What if he just went like 2 years and never ran into anybody he knew? And then he has this little girl.
That like freaks me out thinking about this now. Like, what would happen if I was in another town? Like, I'm traveling for work and something happened.
Well,
and
someone would definitely report you missing.
True.
In this case, no one reported him missing.
It's the drug addict.
And that was the mistake here. Wow.
How many missing people out there are actually just lost souls that don't know who they are?
I don't know what the statistics are on not having a memory.
Yeah.
But
if you're drugged up enough.
But this does go to point too that a lot of people who are drug addicts, sometimes they die and their families have no idea because they just write them off as, they're gone again. Or they were murdered or abducted and are now in trafficking.
Yeah, we know that for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad this had a happy ending.
Yes.
And it sounds like he's doing well and he's hopefully staying away from the drug addiction. I know that's an everyday struggle. Thank you for writing in.
Thank you, Charlie. Crazy story.
I thought it was going to be true crime. And this actually is a sweeter story than true crime.
Well, I loved this episode.
I really like this episode too.
I freaking love lab reports.
This is so fun for us guys. So we don't want to stop doing it. We are always open to feedback. Like we said, let us know what you think about this new format. We're always looking for ideas of things to research, whether it be for larger episodes, mm-hmm. these lab reports. Just we like feedback in case you haven't heard that from us 1,000 times now. We need that because we want to bring you a show that you look forward to hearing every week.
And I think that this would be a good combination. Yeah. I really do.
Yeah, I'm feeling good.
Something for everyone.
And now we're really hungry and we're going to go get some food. You know where to find us. We're on all the socials. And if you want to be part of one of these future episodes,
please email us at lucidlabpodcast@gmail.com.
And I think that's all we have today. Enjoy your springtime.
May the flowers bloom.
Yes. May no more snow fall in Colorado.
It will.
Bye.
See ya. Stay lucid.